Welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our Sweet Ops community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's May 15th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for funded startups and enterprises that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. And we do this using our 200 plus Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your startup launch better products faster so you can free up your bandwidth for innovation and nail your value delivery every time. So if you're curious if we can move the needle for you, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and we'll chart roadmap for success for you. So how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is informal. Engage as much as you'd like. Ask questions. If you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Go to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. All right, let's get into some news and announcements that caught my attention over the past week. It was actually too much to fit on a slide, so this is all we're going to talk about today. Maybe they're not going to be that long. So first one is something I was excited about when I received a notification this morning in ChatGPT to download the Mac app. So I did that, and then I was promptly told that I am not allowed to use the app. So they must have some slow rollout going on over there. I'm curious to see what this app will entail or what it brings. I didn't see really much from the screenshots here, what it gains. What I would hope that I could do, something that I can do on the mobile app, is search my chat history. So I'm hoping the desktop app adds that ability, among other things. Has anyone been added to that invite? Or has anyone been able to use the app yet? Nope. All right. All right, the other big news for this week is Oracle announcing in their EBS manager, some e-business suite cloud manager, that they are now moving to OpenTofu officially. I think it was like you have until end of June to make that move. Why this is significant is it's a major enterprise backing in their product using OpenTofu as opposed to HashiCorp BSL. I'm curious about the announcement. Why now? Why not, 2 months ago or a month ago? Reading into it, it's maybe with the release of 1.7, maybe it's that they actually got some letter from HashiCorp. I don't know. Anybody have ideas?
Yeah.
IBM?
No. Well, that certainly has to do with it if that didn't push them, but I don't think they had enough time to react from that. I think, they started turning the wheel on the Oracle ship the day that the BSL license probably came out, and it took them this long to get there. Right? They do not move quickly in large enterprise things. And if you don't understand, like Oracle eBusiness Suite is Oracle's equivalent of SAP. It's like their giant like ERP application. And this is a tool that basically deploys their ERP suite to like their cloud. So I'm assuming that like this isn't just willy-nilly, we'll switch something out and hope it works. This has to go through like product management and development and testing and validation against old versions and yada, 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 like a million different things. So I'm sure it just takes them a long time to do anything like this.
I also thought it was interesting because Oracle, aren't they famous for being the first company to really adopt Terraform? The first cloud provider to fully adopt Terraform as the primary recommended way to manage it, versus like AWS, which has CloudFormation, and Azure, which has Azure, what is it, RM or something?
Yeah, Resource Manager, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they did, when they released their cloud, that was the only way to basically provision resources Other than like ClickOpsing was using Terraform. So, So
All
I,
right.
they've always been sort of in the Terraform camp.
All right,
So,
let's
does
see.
this impact OCI, Oracle Infrastructure Cloud, or is it only the ERP? That particular like announcement is that the tool that they provide to their eBusiness Suite users to deploy eBusiness Suite to the cloud has taken Terraform out. It had Terraform like under the hood, so they took that out of the mix, and they added OpenTofu to the mix. So the cloud is still the cloud. This is just their tool. Like that basically their tool was probably violating the VSL the way that the VSL is written. So now that they are now they're just re-releasing a new version of the cloud, not of the cloud, of the deployment tool. They haven't said like you can't deploy to their cloud with Terraform. This is just their tool that they published that they changed.
Exactly. I
Got
mean, there's nothing wrong using BSL licensed Terraform with Oracle's infrastructure cloud. And you can obviously use Terraform Cloud and have all the benefits of that and Sentinel and go to Oracle infrastructure cloud. However, if you start trying to automate some of that, or if you use any third party trying to do it, or if you engage any professional services company that does paid support to try and do it, you might be in jeopardy. So.
Well, yeah, and Oracle particularly is distributing an application that requires you to download and use Terraform
Yeah.
in order to use their
Function.
application. And
Yeah.
there's like a specific clause in the VSL against doing that without paying HashiCorp, basically.
That is, yeah, something we didn't really talk about, but HashiCorp has clarified their language on embedded. And basically anything that downloads, yeah. Terraform to operate is considered embedded by that definition. So,
Yeah, and that was updated April 15th. So that might have been what pushed Oracle to move a little bit more quickly on this as well.
yeah. Well, it's interesting. Yeah, what, that means. All right. Next announcement. Is well, we talked about on office hours about the guy who got the really big Amazon bill because he incidentally picked the name of a bucket that some open source project was using in their examples and incurred a ton of charges as a result of all the requests coming through for that project. Well, the article gained a lot of notoriety through Hacker News, LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. And Jeff Barr even came out and said that that was wrong and that shouldn't happen. Amazon moved quickly on this, and they are no longer going to charge for several HTTP error codes on AWS anymore. Most notably, the 403 access denied message. So somebody can't financially DOS attack you by sending a bunch of 403 requests to your bucket, which I could see could have been a pretty effective way of denying your competitors, money. A lot of ads, for example, are served from S3 buckets and be pretty easy to figure out. I think there's even a site that helps you find or discover buckets associated with certain companies. So, anyways, this is good news. Let's see. In other AWS news, Andy Jassy, CEO of AWS, is stepping down and being replaced.
No,
Oh.
Andy Jassy is the AWS, I mean, is the Amazon CEO now. It's actually,
Oh.
it, it's actually, what's his name? Adam Slepsky or whatever his
Adam
last name is.
Slepsky is the CEO of
Yeah,
AWS. Okay.
he's stepping down.
He's stepping down. I got that totally wrong. So that was that announcement. Let's see, other news. Just a random one. I was looking, what I was trying to do was actually see, is there a badge? Maybe somebody can tell me, is there a badge that somebody can put on their profile, for example, that shows they sponsor someone else? I couldn't find that badge, or I couldn't find how to do that. If somebody knows, let me know. But in doing so, I came across this site. And what was interesting about this site was it's just an index or directory of every single freaking badge combination you could imagine. So if you want to spruce up your GitHub profile and by showing off maybe some of your skill sets or some of the things that you use or you do, here's one way of doing that with these badges.
Are you thinking about a Cloud Posse NFT?
I'm not very bullish, to be honest, on DeFi kind of marketplaces in the ecosystem right now. I just want, you know, standard cash. But you do bring up a point. So one of the things we're testing at Cloud Posse right now, seeing how that goes, is introducing something like what Wikipedia does. Drawing attention to the fact that open source survives in large parts through sponsorship and contributions. Right now, we're seeking financial sponsorships of our open source. So we added this announcement across our organization. Clicking on that then takes you to our sponsorship page, where you can see that we're trying to increase the number of sponsors that we have right now. And we go over that a little bit. So yeah, if you're an organization that benefits from a lot of our modules, if it would be painful if Cloud Posse went away, that's a great litmus test if you depend on us. It'd be really nice if some organizations, some enterprises and corporations would step up with some token of appreciation through financial sponsorship. Talk to your boss about it and see if that makes sense. I really firmly believe that this is what makes open source great. It allows anyone, it helps everyone out. It helps smaller companies who can't afford it. It helps huge enterprises standardize on what they do without, building everything in-house. Especially in America, we have a great tradition of donations, of giving money to organizations or people in need. So I think that open source is dependent on these principles. And if there's a way companies can find a little bit of, extra cash to put towards open source, that would be great. There was something I wanted to share in here. Hold on, let me see if I can find it quickly.
While you're looking, I'll just say, Venkat, for $100,000, we'll build you a personalized, one-of-a-kind Cloud Posse module that can be all yours.
When I have $100,000 to do that work, I will build up in mind.
And that's your NFT.
But, it's an interesting fact. I don't think that... I think in the minds of some developers and the minds of some companies, Terraform isn't a real language. So what you build isn't real software. It's not like building a full-fledged, checkout API or something. But these Terraform modules have a significant investment that went into them from customers. Some of our modules have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop. And I don't think that concept rings true to everyone to realize that's why our modules are better, is because so much investment has gone into building them and thinking about them and constantly being iterated on through corporate investment to improve them to meet their needs. So, that is helpful. It would also be helpful if we have other sources of revenue. So yeah, we would love to see some sponsors step up and see if we can make that work. And we're really interested in feedback. How could we make sponsorship more valuable to you? How can we raise awareness about open source sponsorship in general? And that brings me to what I wanted to talk about was something kind of cool that I discovered this past week. I don't know if I had seen it before. The funny thing was, I was just ranting about it. I'm going to show you the link here in a second. I was just ranting about it, how I wish GitHub made it easier for companies to support the open source that they depend on. If only there was a way that GitHub did that, that would be awesome. And then I came across this by total coincidence. None of my dependencies can be sponsored, turns out. And it turns out none of you could have discovered Cloud Posse either, because HCL is not one of those languages. And what's interesting to me about that is that Octoverse, HCL was mentioned as one of the top programming languages growing in the HashiCorp ecosystem. So I was pretty bummed that HCL was excluded from that. Also, in talk of this, critical infrastructure. This is infrastructure. This is infrastructure as code, in fact. Can we please support sponsorship on GitHub for that? So.
I think it's probably even more complex than that, though, because there is no dependency manifest in the way that they determine this with everything else. So, like in any of these other languages, they're actually looking at your
Packages.
TOML, dependencies, or package.json or Go mod, file or whatever to determine it. In order to determine it in HCL, you would have to literally scan every line of HCL, look for source usages, and then parse out the source usages, then go to the registry, and then figure out like where that is actually hosted, and then link to the repo, which is not nearly as easy as all these other languages is to
All
determine
right, everyone, start committing your
all those
Terraform lock
things.
files. Let's make this easier for
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, HashiCorp is kind of moving that direction, but it's still not the first class way of managing those dependencies.
Yeah.
All right, so that was my little rant on that. All right, I'm sure we can hear everybody, sighing that they're not going to be able to use Facebook workspaces anymore, workplaces anymore. This is shutting down. It didn't work out. Matt only brought it, reminded me. The reason why this was interesting to me was Matt was just talking about this 2 weeks ago, facetiously saying, why don't we just move to Facebook workplaces? Well, this is exactly why, because nobody was really using it. Though, I mean, it still had some impressive numbers here. Like they still had 7 million paying subscribers. But when you're at Facebook scale, that's just a drop in the bucket.
Was also 3 years ago.
Yeah. All right.
I think
So,
that was the peak.
yeah. Yeah. During COVID, probably. So they're going to continue using it internally, but not offering it as a service. All right. Here's one that I'm sure is going to elicit a lot of discussion or conversation, and in two ways to approach this. But, all right, so Google's conference is going on right now and has come out with a lot of AI announcements. It seems like that's the only thing any major cloud can talk about these days is something AI related. One of those is this announcement that Google is going to introduce on the Android OS the ability to detect certain kinds of attacks, namely scams. And on the surface, this is pretty awesome and scary at the same time, right? So if any of you have older parents, this is a real concern. It's a real concern of mine, I know. And the social engineering has become so good. We talked about the risks of social engineering for open source last week. We talked about, well, I don't think we've talked about this particular type of issue yet. But the concern here is, of course, the slippery slope. What next is it going to do? Now, on the good side is this is client side, so it's not sending the stream out live and listening to it and ranking it or rating it. But what other things could this lead to? Apple had a lot of controversy when they were going to introduce something to detect, I forget what the standard was, but basically to identify child porn on iCloud photos, and they walked that back based on the backlash and concerns of where that could lead. This is one of those things. If this capability is made available in the operating system, what is preventing, say, certain governments from reaching out and say, hey, you know about that feature? We'd like to know about that. Plus, why don't you add in a couple of these other things? Let us know about some more civil dissent. Let us know about terrorist attacks, maybe. Let us know about my political opponents, etc. So, any thoughts on this? Where this is headed? Good, bad, or indifferent?
I mean, the first thing that I know 100% with certainty is going to happen is the some sort of keyword hash of things that you're talking about is going to be uploaded to Google, and that is going to target you with ads for those things that you were talking about on the phone. 100%.
Really?
There's zero doubt in my
Really?
mind that that will be happening.
Wow.
They won't send your conversation, but they'll send the fingerprint of, these 100 think topics that you talked about, like up to the cloud. And then now they have your phone number, so they know who you are, and now they can target all those things to you directly.
This is like
That's
people freaking out because they swear that Facebook is listening to their conversations and then they target them. Except for, I think that the more likely explanation is there's a lot of other signals that indicate what you're doing, so they could find that out without having to listen. We just don't understand how predictable we are based on our surfing behavior, the sites, the cross site, the pixels across the sites, and all of those other things. But yeah, but what you're saying, Matt, is this comes to fruition actually. Your conversations are actually in some way, indirect or otherwise, being interpreted.
It's
If you
I
were.
can't I mean I will like I would be shocked if that didn't happen if they deploy this on Google
Yeah.
phones.
Well, what I think it had, I mean, you have to, what's the word? Whittle away the resistance. It's a 10-step chess game, and the initial thing is showing how good it is and wearing away that initial reservation, and then adding features until the point you get to the point where you're actually, oh, and we're using this for advertising. All right.
I also
Next
wanted to know if the Apple technology that you talked about, if Jin Wang from Silicon Valley was building that for them. It was called Cocktail Wiener or No Cocktail Wiener.
I remember that. I'm so bummed that show ended. I laughed so hard.
Was a very funny show.
All right, next. Next one was just an interesting observation that I saw was that HashiCorp, this was one of at least two posts I saw, there's probably more than, has been using Reddit directly, the Terraform subreddit, to solicit feedback on upcoming versions of Terraform. So, obviously I'm miffed what HashiCorp did, but I mean, I think it is a good thing for companies to reach out and solicit feedback, even if they've done other things I don't agree with.
That's probably an IBM guy with a HashiCorp address now.
Sometimes I'm bad at reading facetiousness, but
No,
I
I'm
mean,
being serious.
but I mean, the deal's not going to close until like late this year or something, right? So things aren't done yet, right?
I don't know.
Plus,
I'm
I've always
actually
wondered what a
surprised.
transaction like that looks like. When you do a multi-billion-dollar transaction, like what's happening? Where's the money transacting? How many accounts are involved?
The engagement on this Reddit post looks a little low. It's only 23 upvotes. I would have expected a lot more if it's the first time they've done it, but maybe it'll pick up.
And apparently Mark chimed in here on something.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Garvita, I misgendered. It's a woman, and she's been at HashiCorp since March,
Okay.
so she's brand new.
Eric, scroll down. I don't know if you saw it, but so I was wondering if anyone asked about a license change. It had 88 upvotes. If you keep going down, someone mentioned GPL, I think. Yeah. How many upvotes I was kind of expecting on the very parent topic, so that's where they all went.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write a bot to go like up to upvote that comment for forever.
That's pretty funny. All right. All right. This was one that one of our team members shared. I think there's been a few of these that have come up. The first thing developers were thinking is as soon as an API was available for OpenAI is kind of write my commit messages. This is a Node.js CLI that you run called AI commits, and it looks at your commits that you've the files that you've added so far are affected in this current commit. And creates or that are staged so far, and then adds a comment describing those changes. I haven't gotten a feedback. I haven't heard back yet how well it's working for Dan or not. Dan, are you here? No. Has anyone tried one of these tools, had success with it?
I've looked at a couple different ones. I was a little hesitant on using it because I wasn't sure if it's going to rip my credentials from my dev environment and just concerns like that. But I have been using something safer called Codeium.ai. And I think I may have shared that with you privately. But if you open up, if you have open source repositories or public repositories, you can have it do a PR description and comment for you. So it does a little bit of code analysis. And it also gives you a nice description. So if you're lazy on your pull request descriptions, it kind of comes in and makes it look like you spent 20 minutes on it. So I like that a lot. Works really well in public repos. I haven't tried the private version of this yet, but it's definitely a time saver. And even for my own PRs, even though I've written it, it's kind of nice to have a second set of eyes and see what it picks up. It's not perfect. There have been times where I think when I first used it, I typed in describe, or there's like a shortcut for it, like some bot command, and I ran it twice and I got slightly different results. The second was more comprehensive than the first one. But overall, it seems like a value add for me.
Are you paying for it or?
Oh no, just using the free version right now. And it only supports OpenAI, and you could also self-host it. I think if you use their version, they're unfortunately probably eating the OpenAI fees for you. But if you want to run it privately, you should be able to just inject your key in.
Matt, you were using some service for code review. Did it not pan out? Because I never heard from you.
No, it works. It actually works really well. Code Rabbit.
CodeRabbit, yeah, I thought that's what it was. Any updates you want to share on CodeRabbit?
I mean, I've used it on a couple of our internal repos just to test it out with the work that I've done, and I've actually been really happy with its reviews. It's actually made some like real suggestions, like change this, refactor this, It does a really good job of summarizing what has changed in the PR, pretty similar to what you were saying, Venkat, and a bunch of other things there. I've been really happy with it. It's free for open source orgs, but I'm not sure what the price is for everyone else, or I should say open source repos. But I think there are some chats that are some chats. I think there are some things in Pro that you don't get in the free version as well, like even for open source. I think like the daily stand-up reports, it gives you a summary on the paid version of like everything you did in a day kind of thing, across all of your contributions, because it has your GitHub. It's tied into your GitHub like account, so it can tell what you've done.
Oh, so you don't
Oh, so it
actually.
helps you with your own stand-up report. That's pretty awesome. I would sign up for that in a heartbeat if as a developer.
You don't have to actually install it in the organization. It actually just uses OAuth off your GitHub. Is that correct?
You do have to you have to authorize it in the repo, like for it to run, because the PR summarization and all of that kind of stuff is on is done by a GitHub app, and like so it sends it webhooks, and then it actually runs like a machine learning model against it, and then writes comments back on lines of code that you've written and produces a summary for you and all that, but it doesn't do it just with your own creds.
Got it.
I,
So
I'm
do you
just I'm just saying it can use your own GitHub credentials, I think, to determine what you've done in a day. Like, so that's how it helps you with your stand-up report. It'll tell you like all the stuff you did yesterday kind of thing on GitHub.
That sounds pretty useful to not have to think about it and just get a report to read off in the morning. Do you happen to know if it uses OpenAI or is it like compatible?
I
Okay.
don't know.
Cool.
It's all I can say is that it made a bunch of comments on when I tested it on the repos I was using, and they seemed useful. It wasn't like hallucination or spammy or anything crazy like that. They were actually some legitimate comments that it made.
Cool. Have either of you or anyone on this call used Copilot yet? I heard they added some functionality for PRs, but I haven't tried it out yet.
We use Copilot all the time, but not the whatever that new version is called. I can't remember what it is. The thing, Eric, the thing I showed you where they're in their
Oh.
blog post where they announced it, how good it is at helping you solve problems and iterate and everything else. The code that it generated didn't actually solve the problem that they asked it to solve,
That would be a fun thing
in the
to talk. You
beginning.
want to dig up that link, and then let's talk about it in a second, just because that would be an interesting dissection that I didn't hear talked about really in all the press release. All right, so I'm going to skip around a little bit. Here's one that I found pretty interesting. Haven't used it at all, but definitely feel the use case. So. When you start using a lot of Helm charts, those Helm charts are proliferated all over the place. They're inconsistently delivered. Some will have registries, some will have third-party registries, some will just be in a Git repo, and those things can go away at any time. So it is a nice peace of mind if you have vendored those in some way. So how do you do that? Well, I thought this was a cool approach using OCI. Then they provide a manifest. So in the manifest here, you specify the charts you depend on, and then it will automatically pull and push those up at the versions that you specify here to OCI. So you have a permanent record of your dependencies. Obviously, that's just one thing. You still have the Docker images. You still need to solve how those get vendored, but it's, one step in that direction. Combine this with the GitHub action, and you're golden. All right, Matt, did you
I
figure
dropped.
that?
I did. I dropped it in the Zoom chat. If you look, it's the last link.
All right, let's see here. Oh, lots of little messages here I didn't see. Sorry, guys. All right. So yeah, Matt and I were talking about this. Matt brought it
It's
to my attention.
It's not sharing for some reason on.
Oh, is it on a different window that opened? Oh, yeah, hold on. All right, you see?
There we go.
All right. So this was the announcement. Matt, you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, so I mean this was just the announcement a couple weeks ago, I guess, on this GitHub workspace. And if you scroll down a little bit, Copilot workspace, and what the idea is that in your repo you can go in and provide a task. If you go, I think you scroll past the what this thing is trying to do. That yeah. So the idea is that in here in a comment, you can kind of link like what you want it to do. So in this case, it's saying they're asking Copilot workspace to validate some URLs to make sure that they're secure URLs. And then that they are that it's a GitHub URL, and it could also be a subdomain of GitHub that, you know, in this case. So then they walk through this whole example of how to do this in Python. And if you keep scrolling down, so here, oh, that first thing, if you go scroll back up for 1 second, this thing is now that you've given them the requirements, it generates like a plan of what it's going to do. And saying like, here's what I propose I'm going to change. And then if you keep scrolling down a little bit more,
It
yep,
lost.
so there's like,
Yeah. I'm just curious, did it keep the subdomain requirement here?
no,
Yeah, or subdomain. Who
there it
knows?
did.
Like it's,
Yep,
yeah.
exactly. Yeah. And then here, then they write this, then they show that this GitHub workspace thing, Copilot workspace, actually writes the code. It changes the code for you in this utils dot Python. But what I noticed when I was reviewing this whole thing is that the regex that it came up with doesn't actually validate any subdomains of github.com either, even though that was one of the clear requirements that they laid out in the task. And they put this out as like a demonstration of how great this tool is. And I was just saying, Eric, well, this can't even do what, like, you know, the first year engineer that graduated out of college could do. It can't
Write a
follow
good regex.
directions. Yeah, and not only that, but it wrote like it actually wrote like this, and then it writes tests down the bottom, and it has three things that it says it's going to do. It's going to make sure that it's a secure or secure URL, that it's a no, it's right there. Scroll back up. It's in the green, right on the bottom.
Oh, here, yeah.
Secure, and then a valid GitHub URL. But then they just and it's
Or
a or subdomain for
subdomain.
URL, and they don't have they actually aren't checking that like a subdomain URL against it. They're only checking a top level URL against it. So even the test they wrote. Like they wrote the wrong test to even see that the code was broken in doing this. So the other thing I noticed is if you keep scrolling down, oh, right there, like go back up on the plan, you can see it also says it's going to update the README. So it says it's going to update the README to include a summary of the repository. It's going to add a section summarizing the validation methods. Okay, maybe that one's valid, but like, why is it making all these changes that it wasn't asked to make? Like, include a section about the license, linking to the license file, add a
Yeah.
section explaining how to contribute. Like, no
What
one
does that
said,
have to
please
do?
go do
Yeah.
that. Like, so it really threw me off. Like, this is their showpiece releasing the, you know, releasing this tool to the world. And, you know, these mistakes were made when I looked at it. I'm like, oh my God, that doesn't even do what it said it was supposed to do. And then I was like, why the hell is it doing all this stuff to the README? So I saw it because there's a demo video of it happening. And I watched the person like on the demo video. I didn't zoom in on the screenshots that closely, but then afterwards, when I zoomed in on the screenshots, I saw that it had the same problems that the demo video had. So yeah, I was like kind of taken aback that no one in product management or any of the developers that saw this or anything else before they released it caught that. It seemed like crazy to me. So anyway. That was my 2 second rant on this thing.
Yeah. Well, then that just goes to show you, though, like the value as a senior engineer. Right.
I
So my.
guess. Oh, a value of like a second year engineer or something like that. That is definitely not a senior level catch.
It's not a senior level catch, no. But yeah, I don't know what it is like the, in the review process of this whole thing. It never went through somebody who actually looked line by line over it. Wait, is this actually doing what we said it should do?
Which is dumb because it only changes like 10 lines of code.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like this is a lot of code that it
Yeah,
changed,
it
right?
wasn't a
Only the
big code
green
review. Yeah.
highlights are there. And I was like, where's the test for the subdomains? That's what caught me like at first. And then I was like, wait, it didn't, the regex, and then I had to read the regex. I'm like, the regex isn't even checking that it's a subdomain. I was like, okay. So yeah, anyway.
All right, let's see here. Get back to my
That feature is like $10 a user per month, right?
I'm not sure. I can't keep track of GitHub pricing anymore. I don't know what's included in what.
I'm not sure where they've landed on pricing. I'll take a look later. Thank
It's gotten really complicated to understand GitHub pricing. It's getting to the point you're going to need to have like the AWS calculator for GitHub.
you.
All right, so that was that. We had a great discussion a few weeks ago about hiring, as there was a post that somebody had put out there and looked into the various hiring practices of 100 plus companies. And
That didn't open either, just so you know.
yeah,
But
yeah. I keep
okay.
on. Why is it not opening? Right, I will. Copy. No, not copy. Copy. All right, cool. I'll start over. So yeah, a few weeks ago we had a conversation about an article that came out where someone had informally surveyed 100 or maybe it was even 200 companies on their practices for giving exams or homework or things like that. And we talked about if, what are the ethics of that? Should those be paid? Is that mutually beneficial? And what should go on those exams? So this was very timely that Linear just had a post here brought to my attention from Matt talking about why they do work trials at Linear. Matt, you want to talk about it?
I was just gonna say, to be fair, the my bringing it to your attention was timely, but this is actually from December, I think, the post.
Oh,
I just saw it. So yeah,
okay. So it was a coincidence. It didn't just come
yeah,
out.
no,
But
yeah.
sidebar, Linear is a really awesome project management app. Matt also turned me on to it. If you are frustrated with Linear, Monday, Asana, Trello, the 50 other project management softwares out there, maybe consider Linear. They're a pretty modern software company in how they operate as well. So therefore, I think this is an interesting article. The TLDR is that they believe that this is a good way to evaluate what it actually feels like working with a candidate. They say that candidates are probably going to be a little bit nervous, so take that into consideration. And it does put onus on you to make sure you have accurate or you have something that is achievable in those 3 days that you can start to work through. But even if not achievable, this shows you how they think. It shows you how they work and how they break down the problem. Do they push back or do they just go run with it? Don't ask questions for 3 days and how does it feel to work with them? Do they jive with your culture and so forth? Lots of different things. I can't, sorry, go on, Matt. You were gonna say something?
No, I was just going to say, just for people who haven't read it, like their approach is that they do a paid work trial for everyone that wants to join, and it's basically between 2 and 5 days long, depending on the task that they figure out that you want to do. And it's usually a real task, like from their backlog that they and they identify several of them. And I thought that that was my, that's what I was about to say, is that the thing that really sold me, like I was already kind of on the, on, you know, in this camp where I've advocated for these for a while. I know I've talked against, you know, a lot of people here, like, or argued that it's, we should do these. But in the last 4 years, they've had a 96% retention rate after they've, you know, used this, they've used this to hire and bring people on the team. And that's both, I sent a quick email, and that was both voluntary and involuntary, retention rate. So they, you know, they haven't had people leave. So the people are getting comfortable with the, with the team, and then the team is getting comfortable with the candidates, and 96% of them have stayed, you know, over the time that they've been doing this, which is like phenomenal in, you know, in the tech world, to have any kind of any retention rates anywhere near that. So I don't know. I thought it was a pretty cool article. It walks through like pretty in depth how they do all of this. And then, just like I had been advocating for previously, they basically said that they go through a standard interview process, and then this is like the final step to bringing them on. And if you don't, and if you can't like accomplish the full task, you basically break it down, do something that you can accomplish, demonstrate it, and then if you get hired, it's basically the first thing that you finish, as like a new employee. You basically finish the task and then ship it, you know, kind of thing. So it's seems pretty cool to me.
Also, an interesting idea is using the weekends to help candidates. I think what's interesting about that is it shows some compromise, you know, that it is awkward for them to take off from their day job if they have one for this opportunity. They shouldn't have to risk their livelihood to apply to your job, right? Like they have family that mouths to feed. So the fact that the company is willing to meet them halfway and also sacrifice their weekend, I think that's a testament.
Yeah, I have some comments on like that. That to me, I get it. It's great from a candidate perspective, but then you also there's a few things. One, you don't get what it's like to work there like during a regular business
That's a
day.
good point. Yeah.
Second, you're asking the team that's interacting with them to sacrifice their weekend and life during that time period to do that. And if you're high, like interviewing a lot of candidates, and this happens frequently, then your team is going to start to regret
Yeah,
it because they
they're
have to
gonna
work on
rebel.
the weekend to integrate with other people. And
Their
I really
retention
hate
number
that
might go
idea.
down.
Yeah. So, but they, what's cool is that if you look down on the bottom, it says that they typically work with a team that includes the recruiter, the hiring manager, and 3 to 5 teammates during the trial process, which is great because you can actually see what it would be like to, you know, to work there. So I think that's pretty cool.
Indeed. All right, cool. Let's see. Da, 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 da. Last one.
Sorry, I just wanted to point out one other thing that from that is that they also said that they do it for most roles within the organization, so not just tech roles. So
Yeah.
like I think they mentioned there if you're like you're getting hired to be a content marketer, they actually have you like write a blog post or you know something along those lines as part of it, after they gave you the after they give you the you know some details and everything.
Yeah, so even up to sea level. Would you
Yeah.
be CEO for a few days? Test it out.
We need to terminate a bunch of people. Help us pay food.
Want to test your ability to handle that situation. We understand it's a little bit awkward, but yeah. All right. Last announcement. There's been a lot of these type of things coming out lately. Obviously, I would be very concerned to adopt some young technology to run my production database. But fundamentally, what this is saying is Amazon RDS is incredibly antiquated. When are you going to come out with branching methodologies and better ways to handle your databases in modern ways? Because it feels very antiquated. So, what is this? Dolt adds a Git-like interface CLI for managing your MySQL database. Similar concepts as other new upstarts like NeonDB. You mentioned one, Matt, I
Planet
forget what it was called.
scale.
PlanetScale does this as well. And here's another one called DALT. I don't know the fundamentals, how it's implemented, how feasible or realistic it is, but it, has the concepts that you would expect to see if you're very familiar with the Git CLI. So things like branching, cloning, diffing. Diffing's really interesting. Compare, imagine using this diffing together with your automated testing. And maybe that I haven't read too deep. Maybe that was the intention for this, but how powerful that would be, to run your integration tests and then, just look at the diff and see if it did what you expected.
Yeah, those merge conflicts are going to be a bitch to resolve.
Yes.
I'm still leaning towards Flyway and Liquibase, and I've been pretty happy with those solutions, but I don't know if it's time for me to start looking at Planet Scale or Dolt or some of these other tools. Have either of you or any of you on this call switched from, I guess, the old solutions of Liquibase and Flyway towards one of these newer solutions?
Yeah, and I just wanted to emphasize, like, those are solving it the traditional way of running migrations, while these are trying to solve it at the database layer itself.